Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
What was your point about the Knicks? We'll get to the Giants here in a sec, but I know you wanted to get to the Knicks.
Well, listen, one thing bothers me about the game. Now, I'm not going to go nuts here. Obviously, no Brunson. Of course, the Knicks got in late the night before, back-to-back, that game against Philly. The Cavaliers had a couple of nights off. They get to sleep in their own beds. No Jalen Brunson. By the way, the Cavs are playing very well. They've won 4 or 5. So this is not about going nuts about a loss that I didn't really expect them to win anyway. But where in the world was Bridges last night? And now that's the guy to me that's going to feel the most heat during the postseason. Brunson will come back. It'll be Brunson, we hope. Anthony Towns, maybe some criticism based on how tough he looks. And the other guys are who they are, some the good and the bad. Bridges is on the court last night for almost 40 minutes. He takes 6 shots. And you can't be more invisible than that.
Without Brunson.
You just beat me to it. Without Jalen Brunson. Now, if it's a game where Jalen Brunson is feeling it, and he's heat-checking all night, and Jalen Brunson takes 22, 23 shots, and Carl Anthony Town gets 13 to 15, and OG's been phenomenal, by the way. He's been on a really good run. And OG's banging in, you know, a bunch of threes, that it's just not Mikal Bridges' night. Well, then we don't have a whole lot to complain about. The fact that he was so uninvolved in the game terrifies me for big games.
Yeah, I still think that Carl Anthony Towns is going to be the big... Towns and Tibbs are going to be the two that are going to be the most scrutinized in the postseason. Bridges had his chance here to make an impact, and he did on some nights. Last night, not one of those nights. I still think you have to see how he gels with Brunson coming back. For me right now with the Knicks, not about the results. It is about Jalen Brunson getting back healthy. It is about Mitchell Robinson getting his true legs under him. Getting this group as healthy as possible heading into the postseason. That's been my mentality for months.
Yep.
There was a point where I was like, okay, let's see what Bridges could do without Brunson. I'm beyond that now. It's just to get me to the playoffs here. I'm bored with the season. I want to see what this team is made of when push comes to shove in the postseason.
Yeah, so do I. I don't expect that I will change my opinion, which was formed week one. You know, I they haven't looked like the team I thought they would look like all year. Now, by the way, there's reasons for that, some injuries, whatever. But, and now we're going to get the answer. I mean, it's almost, you know, the middle of the season, April 15th. We start to get the playoffs here. It's going to be fun. My biggest gripe, though, and I can't disassociate what I know about Mikal Bridges. Now, if Bridges was a second-round pick or even a late first-round pick who garnered a big contract from the Knicks, all right, that's one thing. I think I could have a proper perspective. I cannot, and maybe this is more a me problem than a you problem or another Knicks fan problem, every time I look at him, I just think about the 5 first-round picks they gave up. Now, that doesn't mean that I expect you to be a superstar, but I expect you to at least try to be an alpha when Jalen Brunson's not on the court. And that, to me, is, unfortunately, I worry about this, a bit of a foreshadow into what his playoff heart's going to look like. 6 shots, 37, 38 minutes. Unacceptable.
All right, the other thing that we wanted to get into, I just saw a mock draft. I think it was Mel Kiper saw a mock draft. We're talking about the Giants quarterback situation. That will continue to be a theme here right up until the draft. And then after, depending on what they do with that third pick or if they get a quarterback at all in the draft. And there does seem to now still be some, be some momentum again about the Giants and Shedeur Sanders. And then I saw Kiper speculate about the possibility of the Giants taking Hunter at three,
yeah,
trading back.
After they take him?
Yeah, trading back into the first round to get Sanders. So now there's a thought, and then Boomer was saying this morning that he thinks that the Giants, if Sanders were there at three, are going to take Sanders.
I still don't, but you know, Boomer is well connected. I don't think that.
He's not just making that.
No, I know he's not. I don't love Sanders as a player. But
it's just the Giants, to their credit, have done a great job with the okie dokes, with the smoke screens, with the decoys here. Eventually, they're going to have to make a decision, and eventually, we're going to react to it. And if it's not a quarterback, it's not going to be kind, because this regime has to pick a quarterback. So I don't care how they get one. I don't even care who it is at this point. Just get one. And I'm talking about one to be the potential, not one just to satisfy the fans or the owner. I'm talking about one who they believe in. It's time that Joe Shane and Brian Daboll sack up and pick a quarterback. It can't be the Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston show, which already is starting to drive me a little nuts here with the two
already?
Different. Well, because the two different personalities, you know. We had this conversation.
It's going to be Jameis' team, and Russ is going to be the starter. It'll be very weird.
Bingo. So that's just not a good dynamic.
I don't think so.
Sure. Now imagine adding Shedeur Sanders to this mix,
mm-hmm.
or Jackson Dart or whatever. Either way, I would be stunned if the Giants can get a stud player at number three and trade back in and get either Shedeur or Jackson Dart.
Oh, boy. Like, where is the target that they would have to trade into? Is it the mid-teens? Is it the early 20s?
Well, how far do you think Shedeur falls?
I think there's a chance that, listen, I think there's a chance he goes three, although I'm not married to the Giants definitely taking him. I think there's a small chance that he goes two, very small. I think that he could probably slide the lowest he would slide, maybe 15 or so. The absolute worst, now, like worst case scenario.
I guess anything's possible. That many teams could just be like,
Aaron Rodgers waited there all night. Tell me he can't?
So it is possible. But with the way that the league is structured now, with everybody needing a quarterback, I almost feel like he's worth even a flyer.
It's different now because the money, even when Alex Smith was drafted first overall in 2005, I want to say, out of Utah by the Niners, it was a very different structure with the contracts. The NFL is all about, right now, you know this, and you're alluding to it. You know, you got to find a quarterback. And if you don't know after 2 or 3 years, like the Panthers were ready to move on from Bryce Young. They picked him early. He was a stiff. They were just right. They benched him. They were ready to discard him. They gave him one more shot. He popped it. They might have their guy. And the goal is to try to assemble a ton of talent on the 53-man roster and have a quarterback on a rookie contract so that by the time he gets to that second contract, like Mahomes, like Dak, even though Cowboys don't win, guys like that, Stafford, everything's kind of established and you've already had a good swing at a Super Bowl. But here's the one thing that I don't get. The okie dokes, I think that's interesting. I think if, like, the Giants were drafting seventh like the Jets, I could see that more. Or if they were drafted 11th and they were sending out smoke screen. Who the hell are they trying to fool? Like, Tennessee's going to take Cam Ward. Like, who are they trying to fool?
One team.
Who are they trying to fool?
That's why
I'm confused by that.
Yeah, I don't know. I really didn't give it much thought other than I was following the reports and trying to use some common sense. And like I said, the first one that stuck with me was Jordan Renaud of ESPN saying it is likely the Giants are going to trade up to number one, and if they do, it would be Cam Ward.
Yeah, that's about a month ago.
Maybe even longer than that. Okay, but I hear that, and maybe I wanted to believe it, but I did believe it, and it made sense. So, A, I wanted that to be the case. B, I trust Jordan Renaud and his reports. C, it made sense. When you use common sense, it would add up to where, hey, they need a quarterback. Ward's the best one in the draft by the consensus. If they identify that to be the guy, this is the time you go up and make that move. Now it seems like, and also at the time, it wasn't that Tennessee was in love with the number one pick. More the talk there was that they were going to potentially trade out.
And we had Dimitroff on the show, and he interviewed for the GM job out there in Tennessee, and he told us when we had him on the show, if he got the job, he would have looked to trade out of one to the point.
Right, which is a guy saying if he would have gotten that job, he would have done it. So there's obviously some stock in that. Now, fast forward a month, 6 weeks, whatever it's been, now it's, Cam Ward's definitely going number one. And nobody knows what the Browns are going to do number two, but it feels like the Giants, who now have added two quarterbacks since, one who's not coming here if he's not going to start in Russell Wilson. He wants the opportunity to start, which means, well, how are they going to get a young guy in there? But also, the Giants also went after Matthew Stafford hard. If you go after Matthew Stafford hard, you're not talking about a stopgap this year. You're talking about he's going to be your quarterback the next year. They wanted Aaron Rodgers, and maybe we look at Rodgers as a one-year thing. Maybe they were looking at him more than that, which led them to Russ because they couldn't get the first two, which would make me think, common sense, they don't love any of the quarterbacks in this draft.
Which has been our opinion for a long time, right, based on what you just said. Well, so what's changed? So nothing.
That's what I'm saying. So,
nothing. So people have to write stuff. I'm not saying they're making stuff up.
Well, but also coming from Boomer, again, not that Boomer is the high and mighty be-all, end-all what he says goes, but he's clearly...
It's connected.
He knows what
Come
he's
on,
talking
man.
About when it comes to NFL circles
for
and
sure,
quarterbacks.
For sure,
and if he's saying that he thinks the Giants are going to take Shador at number three, now again, I wouldn't be shocked if they did. I think it adds up. They still need a young quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But after all that we just went through, the Giants are going to have to take Shador Sanders at three?
It would come full circle because that's the way the conversation started. I mean, it kind of seemed like a lock, remember?
Told you, I was told not too long ago by somebody that I trust, and you know, in NFL circles, that it would be, because I was just trying to find out, where are we at after the Giants signed Winston and Russell Wilson, where are we at with the possibility? Is it even a possibility that they take a quarterback early on? And the way it was told to me was that likely taking a quarterback, but not with the first pick.
Okay,
again, that's
okay.
Not gospel either, but I'm just...
Yeah, but it's point you in a general direction. I mean, it's some intel that, you know, you otherwise wouldn't have had, which can help shape opinions.
Also makes a little sense.
No, it does. I don't think it's wacky. Listen, I think the one thing that... I don't love this dynamic in the quarterback room. We've said this a million ways sideways. I just don't love what the Giants are doing. Hopefully they get it right. Hopefully they get out of the grave here. But I do think it's kind of overlooked and or at least overstated negatively. Let's just, because Russ, you're right, Russell Wilson wasn't coming here unless he was the starter, all right? But the contract is set up in a way where he's making $21 million, but only 10 of which is guaranteed, 10 change is guaranteed. So let's say Russell Wilson comes in and is the starter the first month or so of the season, and then Russell Wilson turns into a diva because the Giants either want to go to Jameis or Sanders or Jackson Dart or whatever else the Giants might do. Well, if Russell Wilson becomes a problem, you cut him. So it's not like there's this long marriage. It's a nominal financial commitment in terms of years and in terms of straight guaranteed money. Whatever. If he's a pain in the ass, get lost.
Look, and here's the bottom line. All the speculation, it's fun to talk about with your friends, fun for us to talk about and talk about it with the callers. We're going to find out. What they do with that first pick will tell us. Because even if they take a quarterback later in the draft, to me, that's still too much of a project. It doesn't mean it can't work.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to see a quarterback on this roster that can start at the very least week one, net, you know, 2026 season. But really, it should be at the end of 2025 season.
Well, you know what's crazy? We have all these thoughts about the Giants, and there are several that are very plausible. What the hell do you think the Jets are going to do?
Yeah.
I mean, that is a guess. That is, I think, and I did the pod last night. I didn't really get into the draft too much. I'll do that next week. I think there's a chance the Jets take an offensive lineman at 7. The kid from Missouri, I really do. I'm forgetting his name, but he's an absolute truck or whatever. And he's going to be on the right side. And the thought is with Olu Fashanu, who looked really good and graded out very well before he got hurt, you know, maybe if you want to build it the old-fashioned way, which Muji and Aaron Glenn probably want to do, is it the worst thing in the world if you don't love a quarterback or you don't love whatever to have a bookend at left and a bookend at right and get going with Justin Fields who can run?
That's how the Jets built their last team successfully with Mangini and Tannenbaum, Mr.
That's
T.
True. That's true.
Mangold, DeBrickishaw, Ferguson.
That's right. Yep.
It's also Penei Sewell, who's a big part. Everybody talks about the Lions.
Oh, for Detroit? Yeah, Penei Sewell's great.
Yeah, so, but He's I remember terrific. At the time, wanting him. You know me, even last year, I said I like the pick with the offensive lineman as opposed to the tight end. It's just my philosophy. I would love that if that were the case with the Jets. See, the Jets are, in my opinion, truly in a spot where they could pick any, they could pick any player. I don't think that there's a, they're not in a spot where they're drafting on need, and they have the luxury of saying, okay, we're just going to take the best player that we think can help build the blocks
uh-huh.
to a sustained, successful, you know, run, whereas the Giants say that, but they're really not.
They know what they have to do. They know they have to do something that satisfies the check, the column with quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, you're going into year four, so, oh, we're in a spot, we feel good, we can take any player. Not really.
No, I tell you, in a lot of ways, I know there's more conversations to be had, and we'll certainly have them moving up to the draft here. I only bring up the Jets, not to usurp the Giants, but it's such a different situation. Like, there are, you know, three, four legitimate, interesting, possible routes the Giants could take, and we all identify them. We just did it again here. It's like the scouting report. All right, Giants can do this, that, this, that, and we all pretty much agree that those are the three or four things they could do. When I asked you what could the Jets do, there's a pause, there's quiet. And by the way, I pause, and I'm a little quiet too. Now, I do think they could go O-lineman, but I'm not married to that. I mean, I don't know. If Jackson Dart, and they love him, and he's there at seven, could right. they do, I guess. Could they trade out? Could they trade up? Could they go defensive lineman? There's a couple of kids that we know, whether it's Carter, the kid from Michigan, Graham. Could they go tight end? Could they trade down and take a tight end? I have no idea. It's interesting, though.
BT and Sal on the Fan, obviously a couple of weeks away from the draft, so we're looking forward to that. Back to the phones here. Sonny is in Malvern. What's up, Sonny?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Appreciate it.
What's up, Sonny?
You got it.
Listen, longtime big Giant fans have a big circle of Giants. We all have no problem with the Giants to do it. I'll tell you why. First of all, they want to spend a lot of money on the two best quarterbacks available. And obviously, that was Stafford and Rodgers. That didn't work out, right?
Yeah.
So they signed Winston. They couldn't go into the draft, guys, with just Winston. He could drive you crazy throwing five interceptions in the first game. I wasn't thrilled with Wilson, but if you think about it, they had to sign him. They couldn't go into the draft not knowing who they're going to get. And I think a lot of the social media and the scrutiny involving like you guys and social media and everybody else is going to be taken off the Giants because the first two quarterbacks, I think, are going to be taken, Ward and Sanders. So I think the pressure is going to be taken. Let me ask you this. With Hunter, is he the best wide receiver and or the best defensive back at his position in college?
No,
football?
I think Johnson's the best corner. I think he projects more. Go ahead. I think he projects more as a corner.
Look, for me, the difference maker there is if both quarterbacks go 1-2, I'm taking Abdul Carter, and I'm not even thinking twice about it.
Even with the knee report?
Oh, I don't care. I don't care about – give me the latest. What, there was the foot thing, and now there's the knee?
Yeah, well, no, I'm just a lower extremity. Yeah. Whatever, you know, he's going to eventually need surgery at some point. Yeah. I mean, that's – I'm not saying that that would dissuade me from drafting him.
Yeah. I mean, look, they got to do their medicals and all this stuff on that. We've seen guys drop before with speculation, and all of a sudden they turn out to be game changers. I just think he's the best player in the draft.
He might be. Listen, I got a mock here for you, okay? Yeah. Ready? So, number one, Cam Ward. Number two, Carter. Number three, and I looked at about five before I did the podcast.
I don't want Travis Hunter myself. I know people are high on him.
It's going more. It's funny. I did like four or five mocks research really for the Jet Pod last night just to have a sense of reference. And it was very mixed, as I said, with the Jets. But a lot of maybe 80% of the mocks had Hunter going to the Giants. So does this one. Travis Hunter, Giants. Number four, Campbell, the offensive tackle. Number five to the Jaguars, Mason Graham, the big man from Michigan. This makes no sense. Raiders taking a running back from Boise State. I didn't get running back. Stop. Ty Warren, the tight end from Penn State, to the Jets at seven. I mean, and then they have Sanders going to the Saints at nine. I wouldn't be surprised if he dropped that far. And if he does, I think the Saints probably scoop him up at nine.
Where does it have Dart going in that draft? You have that
keep
up?
Going here. It's a good question.
Only because I'm thinking, so there's a quarterback. Now, by the way, a team that needs a quarterback is going to have to leapfrog the Saints if one of them is dropping.
Yeah.
Sanders or Dart.
Yeah, they're going to be a problem at number nine.
Okay, but then my question is, let's say that mock plays out and Sanders goes nine to the Saints. Now, maybe the Giants are in play to come back in and get Dart, depending on where he would go.
It's possible, because now the Saints are off the board.
Or vice versa. Yeah. If the Saints take Dart and Sanders is dropping,
possible.
Now maybe that Mel Kiper theory can come into play, but the Giants are going to have to do some work to get back in there.
I'm looking for the Dart thing, and then I do want to respond to that. So I don't see Dart here. I'm at the Chargers, Packers, obviously no, Vikings, no. Josh Simmons, offensive tackle, Buckeyes, 25. Kelvin Banks from Texas.
Then I'm going to the first round of all.
I'm up to 28. No, they've got a lot of offensive linemen going. And there's a lot. The interior line, it's a strong defensive tackle, good offensive line draft here. Maybe one or two receivers. I think there's at least two, maybe a third tight end. There's a couple of good corners. Will Johnson's one of them. Travis Hunter's another. All right, so no, they do not have him going in round one. Doesn't mean that that's going to happen.
Do you think Sanders drops that far?
To give me the number
to
exactly.
The Saints, you have him at nine? What was it? Yeah, 4-8-9.
Saints had him at nine. This one, do I think, if I had a bet, I'd probably say no, but
I don't think
it's possible. I don't think it's outrageous to think that. Now, just play this out, though, because to determine where somebody might drop, you've got to really look at the teams that are going to be motivated to take a quarterback. And I know we've done this a little bit. Put the Giants aside.
Yeah.
Pats don't need one. Jaguars don't need one. Raiders don't need one. They just got Geno Smith. I don't think the Jets are going quarterback. Not that I'm saying Fields is going to be a star, but I don't think they'll take a quarterback.
Okay, but let's say pick a team. Jeez. Who would it be? Arizona, whatever. Pick a team.
Yeah.
Let's say they love Sanders. Any of the teams that are picking behind the Saints, let's say they love Sanders.
Yep.
And he drops past the Giants, which means he's going to drop past the Patriots, past the Jaguars. Now you start getting into potential trade-up territory
yep.
with the Raiders, Jets, or Panthers ahead of the Saints to make sure you get them.
To beat them to the same guy. Unless you find out that the Saints covet a different quarterback. If you love Dart and they love Sanders or vice versa. And if you're connected, you know, you'll get that honest information. GMs will share that. Panthers, obviously, their quarterback situation settled for now at 8.
You think the Cowboys would pass on?
I do. I don't think they're taking a quarterback this year. I don't. I really don't. I don't. The Bears aren't taking one. The Niners aren't taking one at 11. Dallas at 12. I don't. You know, are the Dolphins a sleeper team for a quarterback? I mean, at number 13, what are they? Yeah, 13.
I mean, you start thinking about value there.
It's not off the table.
I mean, if you look at a BT and you just go chalk
mm-hmm.
based on who needs a quarterback right now, who's likely to pick one, you can make a scenario where Sanders will drop significantly.
That's what I said before.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Significantly. Same thing
I don't
with
think
Dart.
It's possible.
But again, everybody always needs a quarterback.
Yeah.
And when you start getting into the at some point, you're going to need a quarterback. When you start getting into the value, like think of the teams at the back end, they don't necessarily need it. I mean, I guess the more they don't need it right now is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
What about Pittsburgh?
What about the Colts? I mean, the Colts could use a quarterback. They're 14.
I know with Daniel Jones, even still, you wouldn't take one there.
No, I mean, Miami, you might.
I know that, yeah. It's a fascinating conversation. I guess you can paint the picture where it is possible that if the Giants decide to get cute and go, say, Carter or Hunter, that maybe they can work their way back into the back end of the first round.
Well, remember, we got a break, but we did the draft show a couple of years ago. Yep. You and me, mm-hmm. and who else was there?
Kim Jones,
right? I think it was maybe Keith. Yep. Somebody. We had a few of us on the day. So
Evan,
cool.
I think, might have been there as well.
Yeah, anyway. I think he was too. But I feel like, I can't speak for you guys, I felt like going into that show, I had a clear command of what the Jets and the Giants would do. I knew the Giants were going O-lineman. Would it be Evan Neal or something? Well, it was Evan mm-hmm. Neal. I thought that Kayvon Thibodeau would be in play for the Giants. It worked out that way, and I really thought I wanted the Jets to take Sauce, and I thought they might take receivers well. This year, both teams, I know what the Giants need, and I know what the Jets need, but I feel like I don't really know what either team is going to do. A lot of guessing going on.
Normally, I'll wear jeans and decent shoes, whatever. Yesterday was just, okay, throw on the sweats, throw on a hoodie, whatever. Barely even shower. I did shower, mm-hmm. but, you know. And because of that, I left some jewelry at home on the counter.
Jewelry?
Yeah. And I get it. Yeah.
What do you mean? Like your wedding ring?
My watch and my wedding ring.
You got a chain or no?
I do.
Okay. Yeah.
The chain I usually wear regardless.
I never take the chain off.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. So I get a picture on my way here yesterday. And I'm like, what the hell is this? My wife sent me a picture. I couldn't even tell what it was. And it was of the countertop, which is hard to see sometimes because you get the countertop, you know, whatever the stupid
design
is on
like
there.
The marble cut, like it blends in. All right.
And I'm looking, I'm like, what are these? What is she sending me this? I don't understand what this is. And then underneath the picture, it said, nice. And I'm like, what? And it was a picture of my watch and wedding ring on the table.
Yeah, I can promise you don't give a rat's ass about the watch. That text is about that little ring that's supposed to be in that left hand, buddy. That's what that is.
And I'm like, in that moment, I'm thinking to myself, because I did think about this. And I'm like, should I put the ring on? Nah, I'm not going to put, definitely was going to put the watch on. Let me just leave the ring. It's no big deal. I'm going to work real quick. I'll be home. Not a problem. And then I caught myself trying to like tell her, oh, I forget.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps. Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Got it. Instead of just being like, I don't want to wear it today. Like, what's a big deal? We're married, I wear it every day. I'm throwing on sweats. I forgot my eye drops too, which I did. So I threw that in there, making it like I kind of forgot.
Yeah, just a bit of a disheveled morning. It wasn't just the ring.
Do you wear it every day, the ring?
I lost mine. You know, I was a guy who...
What do you have on you, though? You do have one.
It's a replica.
Okay, yeah. But still.
And I lost it because what happened when I started playing golf again, we got married on October 10, 2010. So 10-10-10. I can never forget my date. And the ring that I got at the altar that night had something written inside, which was really, it meant a lot to me and Jen. So I always kept it on. I was proud of it, and I wasn't trying to hide anything, so I never took it off. But then I started playing golf again, and I would take it off, put it in my car, like where I keep the coffee, or then sometimes take it off and then put it in my bag where I have like tees and pencils and like ball marks and stuff. And I just lost it, long story short. So what I did was I went to Dick's Sporting Goods and I bought a black rubber that I could wear when I play golf. And I wound up losing that. And then I got a replica that Jen got me. And now I never take it off. Like sometimes I'll take, like if I'm lifting, I'll take it off, but I'll be at home to have something at home. I never saw my dad with a wedding ring ever once in his life.
Right.
So I don't think, I mean, I know she's not like, oh, well, can you not wearing it? Where are you going today?
I mean, come on.
No, but did you get that sense that she was hurt or she was
I think just maybe
wondering.
Took it as a little, I mean, we could be, you know, a little sensitive right now with certain things, which is understandable, but I didn't think it was a big deal. Who cares? It's not like I'm going out. I'm going to work. I'm going to hang out with BT, Hoff, and Dove. What do you think I'm doing? Put on my wedding ring. I want to get on the train, go to work, come back, get on the train, come home. I'm rushing home. I mean, the wedding ring.
All right, wait. Question, though, because I remember this. But now, let's face it. Who spent more on the ring? What we spent on their ring or what they spent on our ring?
Yeah, right.
And not even close.
No, not even close.
Jeez.
Right, so if she didn't wear her ring.
How would you feel?
Yeah, not because I'm, like, taking it personally.
Insecurity or anger, just because it's a price.
Yeah. If I'm going to spend that much on that thing, you better be wearing it.
I remember a couple times, like, early, and, like, their excuses. Well, I was doing the dishes, and I don't want the soap to get through it, and then, God forbid, it falls down the drain. And I kind of believe, like, there were a few points where I'm like, well, where's the ring? Like, if she was doing something, I'll put it on. And I do get it both ways.
I don't even, now that you bring it up, I don't even think my wife's been wearing a wedding ring.
No.
I don't even know. I haven't even noticed one way or another.
Wow. Now, okay.
Now I'm going to keep an eye out.
Well, maybe she just has the wedding band rather than the engagement ring sometimes. Or, you know, my wife wears both. But either way, listen, you got to make sure that this is equitable. If she's getting on you for not wearing it, you better get on her if she ain't wearing it. Yeah. You better she's not listening to the show right now,
I guess, I don't think so.
Just make sure, just do it very stealthily. Take a look, see if she wears it for one or two days or doesn't, and then you pounce, and then you got some equity in your back pocket. You're good to go.
Either way, I don't really care. BT and Sal, 888-808-1019. Eric is calling from Clifton, New Jersey. What's up, Eric?
You guys know less about women than I do. The quickest way, and I'm a happily divorced man, that you guys better hold on to that ring like Omar Epps in the movie The Program, and the whole team's coming swatting for that football
all day long.
I
mean, great
on,
movie.
Guys, keep the ring on. Hey, real quick, Hoff with the music. I mean, how far out are we from him coming back from break with, like, Wham or Sade?
Yeah, he's got some weird music, man.
We
got
to rein it in a little bit. Just a little bit.
Accountability. Come on. Okay, so... Oh, real quick, when you guys are talking about with the NFL draft, I don't think Sanders is going to make a pass the Raiders 6. What I think that maybe that Shane and Dable could be doing is, let's say that Ward goes 1 and Hunter goes 2. If they don't want to take Abdul Carter because Travis Hunter's gone. Mm-hmm. They may want to try to scare the Raiders up because keep an eye on this. Look, I wasn't crazy about trading for Geno Smith as a Raider fan, but if you're going to trade for a guy, BT, you know better than anybody. You better get the extension done because nobody's going to a last. They'll tell you. You guys went through this last year with defensive end Reddick. These guys want a new contract, and Geno Smith has not spoken to my knowledge to the media. He's not done a press conference. So
I thought Geno got a 3-year deal.
Not to my knowledge. Not yet. He still won the last year of the Seahawks.
I could be wrong on that. I thought he got 3 years. I'll double check. I thought he did.
Also, you're talking about Pete Carroll here. So I don't think Pete Carroll is going to come in with a new regime with the Raiders and start doing foolish things. Are you looking that up, BT? I'm trying to figure it out.
I am. All right. So working on a new deal, traded from Seattle. Oh, okay. He has 1 year and $31 million left on a 3-year. All right, maybe that's where I got it confused. This is from 3 days ago. Yeah, I guess they're still working on it, so I guess he was right.
Two days ago, Pete Carroll trusts Tom Brady to give Raiders Geno Smith a well-deserved contract.
Okay, yeah, there it is. Okay.
I mean, all right. Fair enough, but I also don't know if they correlate. Like, Geno Smith is separate from what they would view Shedeur Sanders. Unless you're telling me that they believe Geno Smith is the answer long term.
Well, I think they probably think he's the answer for at least 2 years, maybe three, and you're not going to draft somebody in the top 10 and not have him play in 3 years.
Which is why I say Pete Carroll is the interesting part here. Pete Carroll is not going to be here 5-10 years.
Yep.
The Raiders right now are trying to bring back some credibility now, mm-hmm. not draft a potential project or future franchise quarterback. I think they made their decision with Geno Smith, but I think it's separate. If they viewed Shedeur Sanders as a guy who could be an impact, game-changing, franchise-changing quarterback, they would take him. They probably don't view him as that, which is why they went out there and traded for Geno Smith.
You listen, I mean, I don't know what they think of Shedeur, but I don't think that the move for Geno precludes them from maybe drafting a quarterback. I think that they could if things fall perfectly to them. I don't think they'll be incredibly proactive and try to move up to get a quarterback. But if somebody's sitting there staring at him, they might take him.
Will is in New Paltz. What's up, Will?
Hey, guys. First-time caller. Big fan of the show.
Thank you, Will.
So I want to talk about... no problem. I want to talk about Luis Torrens. I think when Alvarez comes back, I don't think the job is his right away. Like, I think he deserves a lot more playing time. Like...
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to be a starting catcher, though, Will, and thank you for the call. Not when Alvarez comes back.
No, but probably not, but why not? Like, I think we could explore that a little bit. Torrens looks awesome.
Yeah, I like Torrens a lot. I think he's a very good backup catcher. And here's the way that you could say it. If you want Torrens in the lineup, maybe have Alvarez DH a little bit. And then you get Alvarez bat in the lineup. Look, there is no... The majority of catching combinations in the league are just that, catching combinations. Nobody's really an everyday catcher anymore. But you're telling me you'd rather take it bats away from Francisco Alvarez bad year hits 25 home runs if he stays healthy?
No, but I think Torrens is better defensively.
100%
for sure.
Better.
I think he's elite defensively. Swipe tags and presence and throwing guys out. Okay. He's better than Alvarez.
But Alvarez also receives a good game.
He does. He's a better hitter.
Throwing to him. Yeah. Okay, so, and he's a much better offensive player. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be opposed to having, in a postseason series, having Torrens catch and bat ninth or eighth or whatever.
Yep.
So you get great defensive catching and have Alvarez bat in the lineup as a DH. I think it's a nice option to have, but let's not make it like Torrens is going to be an all-star catcher after six games. He's very good defensively. I think it was a great pickup that the Mets got him from the Yankees.
It was.
Mendoza clearly loved something that he saw with him,
mm-hmm.
and he was an impact player last year when Alvarez got hurt for the Mets.
Torrens. I watched almost the entire game yesterday. I saw Torrens do at least three or four things. I'm like,
he's a winning player.
He is, and he's only really had one season where he's really, truly gotten the chance, where he's played over 100 games and... had a healthy amount of plate appearances, back in 2021, and that was with Seattle, which is a tough place to hit bombs. It's a big cavernous stadium, as you know. 15 home runs, 47 ribbies, OPS almost 750, and the 15 home runs are only in 350 at-bats. So, again, I'm not making him out to be Piazza or Johnny Bench or one of those guys, but...
I didn't even realize he had that type of year.
Yeah, but it's the only year
where
he's...
What year was this?
2021. He played 108 games, but it's the only time he's really played regularly He's an interesting player to me. I like him.
Yeah, I just would not be. I'm not looking at. Now, look, if Alvarez can't get healthy and can't get in there, or if he's struggling, fine. I like the Mets' backup option with Luis Ferenz, but I'm not making him the starter over Francisco Alvarez. Jeff is in the Bronx. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Question. Is it me, or does Vientos look like Labor Torres 2.0?
Ooh, I think it's you.
That's interesting. That's I think that's a little harsh and a little early and a little unfair because it's early. But I got to see better body language from a second-year player. I can't see you not running out balls and not and just looking too lackadaisical. We just talked about this, so we don't need to go back into it. I think he's going to be a stud. I do. I really, really love his approach at the plate, and I think he's willed himself into a competent fielder. It's looked off so far. I hope it changes. But if the optics don't change, I don't even mean the batting average. That will change. But if the optics of how hard he's playing or how dialed in he is doesn't change, Mets are going to have an issue on their hands.
The difference is that Gleyber Torres from day one has played the game like an airhead, for lack of a better term. And it repeated, it continued the every time there'd be some kind of issue. I don't see that with Vientos. The main issue was the lack of effort. And then yesterday, taking his at-bats with him into the field, making some boneheaded decisions, playing the game with his head up his rear end. But I think this is an aberration. This was not the case at all last year. You could question his defensive skill set in general, which people have. But I think this is more about him struggling at the dish, questioning himself as a big leaguer to live up to the newfound expectations after what was a dominant year a year ago.
I don't understand the whole, if you told me Brett Beatty was, a little aloof or a little disconnected mentally, that would make more sense to me, because this is really his last shot with the Mets here. I mean, he's either going to be a major leaguer with the Mets or he's going to be somewhere else, and I don't know if he's going to be a major leaguer at all, but so I could see that stuff infiltrating his mind early and it manifesting itself in a very unappealing visual way. But I don't understand why Vientos is where. Now, he's an emotional kid, which I like, because it can fuel you. But I don't know why he seems to be so hard on himself. Again, I respect that tenacity because he wants to be great. But it's a week. Loosen up, kid. You had a great. Come on. You're a big league player.
And I'm sure. Breathe. I'm sure that's what they're telling him. You'll be fine here. But he's got to get through this adversity. Everybody does. I don't care who you are. At some point, you're going to hit some adversity. When you come out the other end of it successfully, that's when you become stronger. This is where Soto, by the way, BT, look at it.
Oh, I was watching it.
Oh, I love it. No, we're watching it again.
The great. SNY so he's shaking his head as he walks back after striking out. Did he do that after he tapped out next innings with a little five hopper back to the second baseman too?
No, he didn't do it.
We you do like it. What was your tweet? I saw that was a ridiculous tweet. What did you write? Even when he strikes out,
I love him, or he's a beast or something like that.
But he even had the heart emojis and the blue and gold and orange circle emojis. Boy,
I am in love.
You love your Soto.
I am in love with Juan Soto as a player. Even when he strikes out, he looks at the guy like, all right, you got me. Oh, I can't wait till next time. And I would bet, and probably should bet on this, you could do that, FanDuel, whatever, that Soto's going to go deep on opening day. You just know it.
Call of the Day with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata on The Fan.
Chris is on Staten Island. What's up, Chris?
BT, it almost seems like you toe the line of not wanting to say you think Juan Soto is a little overrated. And I feel like maybe you're doing this to protect Sal's feelings because he's over the moon about the signing.
Every time we talk about
Juan Soto, it seems like you want to say you think he's a little overrated, which, by the way, I think he is.
I said it last year.
Yeah, I said it last year. He was with the Yankees. I don't say that because I don't want to be disrespectful to Soto, because what he's great at is amazing. And I respect it. But it's not about overrating or saying that he's overrated. To me, it's about assigning proper levels of greatness, particularly to baseball players. I take very seriously. Some might say take it too seriously. Right. Let me tell you, that's fine. But when people, Juan Soto's a great player. No, Juan Soto's an amazing on-base machine who can't field, can't run, and has had a couple of seasons that left me scratching my head. That's a fact.
Right. And the fact is that I would rather have nobody on my team more than Juan Soto.
All right. I mean,
we could differ there. You could look at the numbers. You could have your reasons. I have my reasons.
Yeah.
Because there's nobody, including Ohtani and Judge, that has the sack that Juan Soto does. I don't know if that's on Baseball Reference. It's on Slip, Sal Licata Projections. Juan Soto's sack is bigger than Judge and Ohtani, and he's proven it in the postseason. It's not me hoping. It's not me wishing. It's not me dreaming. He's done it. They should have that, I would hope. Maybe next time we talk to Booty out at the stadium or something like that, or if we get Mendy on, we could ask him about that. Where do you guys, I know you're into the analytics and the data, where's the sackometer on your charts there?
Because I'll tell you this, he's got an 80, because the way they grade players out, they don't go like on a 100 scale, like when you go to like a scouting, it's 80, it's on scale, so his sack is an 80.
Why is that?
I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer to that.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because for years, like, collecting stuff, you know, people send stuff out now that they collect to get graded.
Yeah.
And certain things grade at, like, 85, and it's, like, that's the highest
that's
grade.
That's the height? Really?
You know, for certain things, yeah. So now maybe this is the first time I'm thinking about this, where you say they grade on an 80 scale.
Yeah, like arm and contact.
But why?
And
why not just out of 100?
I honestly don't know the answer to that. You look at, it was fairly recent, too. And I've seen other ones, like, where they've published Derek Jeter's scouting, like, his scouting report, like, the card that the scout handed in when they drafted him out of Kalamazoo. I love that stuff. And if you look, there'll be some written assessments as well. It's always based on a number, up to 80.
Hoff, what were you saying right there?
How do you get the sack total? How do you figure that out for you?
That's a great question.
I was going to say, do you measure the sack?
Yeah, it's a great question.
I hope you don't. Do you?
I'm not necessarily measuring the sack, but I think...
You can identify sack when it's prevalent.
I think in October is where the sack is most prominent.
Yes, I would agree.
I think that's where you figure that out. The stuff like the looks and the confidence, the attitude, the head nod, those things are... to me, the measuring stick there. But I have to give you...
sack characteristics, some might say.
Slips is an inexact science. I mean, it's not exactly here, you know, pumping data into the computer. You know what I'm saying?
So you're saying, like, Brett Beatty's spring training doesn't register on the sackometer?
I think in Brett Beatty's career, the register... Right, he is not registered yet on the scale of sackometer. Is that fair to say?
He was graded by a scout. He wouldn't be getting 80. At this point, it would be in the 20 percentile.
Judge is a tough one. Judge is a tough case because I think he... registers very, very, very high.
Massive sack.
Outside of October. And I don't even think it's the, it's a small sample size, so you don't want to say it's just... All right, BT and Sal, 888-808-1019 is the number to call. Larry calling from Coram, New York. What's up, Larry?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
What are you shopping right now? Grocery shopping? What's going on there?
Yeah, I finished the ATM deposit.
Ah, there you go. Okay.
Nice.
It plays music like, you should be happy that you're, depositing money to pay bills. Anyway, I'm going to sound old school, but, until Vientos is out of his sophomore year and potential sophomore jinx, I don't like the idea of the 1-inch chain with the shirt on, on buttons and everything. I think that's more for, proven players and everything. Again, old school, but it's not just a little chain with the cross.
It's a big one. It's like the thick. I like it. I noticed it yesterday again. Yeah, I think it's more like a herringbone, which is like an 80s, 90s thing. It's thick. There's no doubt. Okuni's got his number thick. I noticed that. Obviously, Jazz has drip everywhere. It's an old school thing. I'm not going to sit here and say that you can't get blinged out until you actually hit a threshold of production. Because if I was a young player coming up, I'd be wearing a lot of the stuff. Whether I was hitting 220 or 320, I'd be blinging it.
I think it's absurd to even discuss it in a negative way. Let the players enjoy themselves. Let them be themselves. Also, Mark Vientos did produce big time last year and big time in the postseason. So I think he's earned it. If you're going based off of, he hasn't accomplished anything. How come he's wearing that big chain? He did accomplish something. As a matter of fact, Mark Vientos accomplished a lot more than most, even in just 1 year. The season that he had and the postseason that he had helping carry the Mets to the NLCS in a year where nobody had any expectations, that to me is accomplishing enough to warrant wearing a chain.
Yeah, I mean, that is an older, and no disrespect, I could tell he even said it. It's an older generation that's got a different approach to things that, on one hand, I get it, but I don't subscribe to that.
Find me the guy, I get it to an extent. Find me the guy without the chain. By the way, they're just showing again that Vientos, it wasn't only that play in foul territory. Obviously, he had a bad throw at home, too. He just was awful. The Mets were awful yesterday in general outside of Pete Alonso. Pete was the only guy who showed up. The pitching was fine, too. But
that is a fat chain, though. That's even more than an inch. And that's not a herringbone. That's more like a, that's nice.
But so what?
I like it.
Yeah, it's not,
I love chains.
Of all the wear that we've seen, the jewelry, that's not even, like Acuna's got a bigger chain, I feel like, than that.
And he's got his number, too. He does. And Jazz has that big medallion that his coach made him.
Now, Acuna, you could say, all right, well, what does he accomplish? That's what I'm saying. At least Vientos, and I have no problem with either of them wearing whatever they want, as long as it's within the rules. But at least Vientos has accomplished something. He's got a chain that makes him feel good.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the I think one of the things that baseball has lacked over the years is that it's been too homogenized. We've talked about this. I believe in uniformity in terms of uniform presentation to an extent. Like, I don't love looking, and I think it's, well, the Yankees are like this a little more pronounced with the Mets. I don't love seeing three or four different colored belts. To me, the belt and the stirrups and the hat should be uniform, but...
Well, I mean, it is supposed to be a uniform.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But, like, the chains, the earrings, the eye black, the arm sleeves, you know, all the... bling it up. It looks good.
And Alonso, of course, no bling, or at least
not an ounce of bling.
Just raw.
No drip.
Raw.
Yeah.
Paul Bunyan, ox-type power. It is really refreshing, BT. We started the show with this, so we might as well end with this. It is refreshing to see what Pete Alonso has done early on this year. Now, like I said, it's six games, so nobody's going to go nuts. Same way I'm not going to go nuts about Vientos. It's six games. It's such a small sample size. But if there were any one thing that I wanted to see or needed to see to start this year, I don't need to see Soto go nuts. I know he's a beast. I don't need to see Lindor because I know what he's going to do come May or June.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to see a different type Pete Alonso come through in big spots, especially with Soto in front of him. You can make that case in general with the offseason that he had with the last 2 years, trying to get a big contract to be here long term, but with all those things factored in, the number one thing I needed to see was Pete Alonso show some signs that he might be able to recapture what he had in 2019 and 2022, and he's done that.
And I believe he's going to keep doing it. I do. I think he's going to have a really, really good year, a really big year. I even said earlier in the show, I think he's going to get MVP votes. I don't think this is just a quick little start. I think he's really gone to school and he's gone to the laboratory. And I think the fact that he hit the home run off Devin Williams the other way was and he had a couple of the other way too against Philly, a really good tool to hang his hat on to go back to the lab during the offseason, because when he used center field to the right field foul pole, that's when he was beat. And I would agree too but I would add two more names. If you said, all right, three things you want to see this year for the Mets, you're right, Soto's going to hit, Lindor's going to eventually get hot, blah, blah, blah. Diaz will blow a few, but if he's healthy, he'll get 35 saves.
Diaz velocity was a major concern,
it was.
And then it wasn't. That's why I don't have it. Oh, so now it's not even a...
I would say now, I would say it a week ago, I would say it now too. I would say, in no order, I would say Pete, I would say Vientos, and I would say Clay Holmes. And more on Holmes because Manaea is out. We talked about that the other day. You know, Senga, you don't know how long he's going to pitch. He seems to be a real creature of habit, which is a little annoying, I would imagine.